Support for Troy Public Radio comes from Sunshine Behavioral Medicine, providing specialized psychiatric treatments of bipolar disorders and PTSD. More information at sunshine2000.com.
From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Today, freelance journalist Nick Tabor joins us by Skype from New York. He was intrigued by the story of Africatown and the survivors who founded the community after the burning of the last slave ship, Clotilda, in 1860 in Mobile Bay. Nick moved to Mobile while he researched the history surrounding the Clotilda and interviewed the descendants. The result is his book, Africatown, America's Last Slave Ship and the Community It Created. Nick Tabor, freelance journalist, thank you so much for joining us from New York by Skype.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Nick, you have a very comprehensive book out with the story of Africatown down in southwest Alabama. Your book, of course, titled Africatown, America's Last Slave Ship and the Community It Created. How long did it take you to do all of this research?
I would say it was about 2 years of more than full-time research, working, 12, 14-hour days sometimes. But altogether, I was probably working on it for 3 years from the time I conceived it.
You actually moved down to Mobile. So what intrigued you about the story of Africatown and its citizens?
Well, I was struck by the condition it was in now. It's a place with this extraordinary history. It seemed like an absolutely unique historical treasure. But I was surprised to see that it was in such terrible shape. In some ways, one of the descendants of Cudjoe Lewis told me that he felt like that it looks like a war zone now. And in particular, I was there on a day when a law firm was interviewing people about cancer cases and their families, because this firm was suing a paper mill for all the pollution it had emitted, saying that it had caused cancer. So I interviewed a bunch of people who could rattle off all these long lists of family members who had died from cancer at young ages. A lot of people said they themselves had survived cancer, and they told stories about all the pollution they experienced when they were growing up there. And I thought, well, it can't be a coincidence that the neighborhood that was created by the people on the last slave ship also became the industrial dumping ground for southwest Alabama. But what is that connection? So I thought that if we could piece it together and get a handle on how this neighborhood had been singled out that way, then it would reveal a lot about how environmental racism works everywhere.
And what we're talking about right now is environmental justice and how that can be achieved. You started the book talking about slavery in Africa, so you really put the story in context of where it came from. Can you give us a little of that?
I can, yeah. These people, most of them came from an area known as Yoruba land. They spoke the Yoruba language. This is a huge area of West Africa, united by trade routes. The people shared common language, common pantheon of gods and spirits. And we think a good number of them came from a specific town raided by the Kingdom of Dahomey, which was a very militaristic country in West Africa that did a lot of business with European and American slave traders. So the book talks about the culture of both of these countries and also talks about the historical forces at play and why the King of Dahomey in those years was on such a crusade to kind of revive slave trafficking and embark on as many of these raids as he could.
So the ship Clotilda brought 110 of these captives from West Africa to Mobile. And that was around 1860, shortly before the Civil War. I understand from documentarian Theo Moore, who lived in that area for about a year preparing his documentary, that some of these 110 captives were actually sold upriver to Wilcox County. So there were remaining descendants in Africatown. Pick up the story from there, and there have been efforts to recognize the historical importance of Africatown.
There have been many efforts over the years, so it's important to say that the descendants of Timothy Mayer, the guy who brought the people over, sort of chartered the ship that brought them over in 1860. They continued to own most of the property around the neighborhood. In the late 1920s, they leased a big chunk of it to a paper mill. And then in the 1930s, they leased some more of it to another paper mill. So the industrial footprint kept growing. At the same time, it attracted a lot of people to the neighborhood because there were good wage jobs, unionized jobs, in fact, which were not easy to get in the South in those years, and never really have been. So the neighborhood grew. At the same time, the industrial footprint grew and the pollution got worse and worse. In the late 1970s, efforts started up to confer some kind of preservation status on the neighborhood and to make more people aware of the story, and ultimately to sort of change the economy from an industrial one to one that was based on heritage tourism. And in the early 1980s, Howell Heflin, the U.S. senator from Alabama, was involved in an effort to do just that. He introduced a bill in the Senate to create a national park in Mobile, an Africatown National Park.
Let's look on page 196 of your book, Africatown. Can you pick up with his quote there where it says he leaned into the microphone and read from his prepared remarks?
I'd be happy to do that. So Howell Heflin, everybody addresses him as judge because he had been a chief justice of Alabama Supreme Court before he went into the Senate. He said, "Africatown, USA, Alabama, is an area of exceptional significance in local, national, and international history and culture. The neighborhood was a, quote, living legacy of the nation's heritage," he said, "and therefore should be protected and enhanced for ourselves and our posterity." He understood that the Park Service had objections, but he didn't see any reason that those should derail the whole project. "We do not care whether we will end up calling it a park or a district or a landmark, site or zone," he said. He proposed a conference between his office and some Africatown representatives and the National Park Service where they could work out the details.
And Nick, on the companion page, 197, this is the most startling thought in your whole book. I want you to share with us a comparison with Ellis Island.
Yeah, I tracked down some internal records from the National Park Service where some staffers were advising one of the officials in their office on how to testify about this bill, deciding whether or not the Park Service should support it. One of these guys was a historian. He wrote to one of his colleagues, "American blacks had no Ellis Island," and he thought that places like Africatown were the closest counterpart. However, I'll say that they felt as if there wasn't enough historical architecture intact for it to qualify.
We're talking environmental justice. Bring us up to date. What are the prospects for Africatown today?
Well, I think a lot of your listeners know the wreckage of the ship has been identified in the Mobile Delta, and it seems like that's going to really spur their efforts to create, you know, a heritage tourism site there. There's been so much media attention. The most notable example was the documentary Descendant that was on Netflix in the fall, backed by the Obamas. There is a small museum, they're calling it the Heritage House, that's opening in early July in Africatown, and that's going to be the first piece of real infrastructure that the community has to receive visitors. And there's also a separate visitor center in the works. There are at least one person who was there is talking about establishing a company to give visitors tours of the neighborhood. I think it's likely that in the future there will be boat tours that take people out to the site where the wreckage is. So there's a lot underway.
I want to thank you, Nick Tabor, for joining us with this story of environmental justice to be continued.
Thank you.
Joining us by Skype from New York was Nick Tabor, freelance journalist and author of the book Africatown, America's Last Slave Ship and the Community It Created. Thanks for joining us today for In Focus, which is now a podcast on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Carolyn Hutchison, and this is listener-supported Troy Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from Troy University, dedicated to teaching a new generation to lead change. Information on leadership opportunities available to students from day one is at troy.edu/leadchange.